All right, it's day number two of the off-season tour. It's upon us. Ottawa and Buffalo on the clock. It's the Tuesday edition of Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Right now, it's Nick Alberga and Anthony Stewart. Hoping to be joined momentarily by Justin Bourne as well. Appreciate the efforts of Matt Marchese, Dylan Brown, and Lance Kennedy for their hard work behind the scenes. And we kicked off the festivities with Toronto and Montreal yesterday. Today, we continue on in the Atlantic. In mere moments from now, Haley Salvian of The Athletic in Ottawa will be by to break down the upstart Ottawa Senators and about 30 co-hosts of the Instigators on WGR 550 and MSG Network. Craig Revey, former National Hockey League defenseman, will drop by. We'll assess the work of a first-time GM in Buffalo in Kevin Adams, the former Carolina Hurricane. But Stu, I ask you off the top, how much ground do you think these teams around the Maple Leafs have made up? We talked about Montreal last night. I think we probably both agree that Ottawa's probably still a bottom five team in this league, but they're definitely improving. And the Buffalo Sabres got one of the biggest fish in Taylor Hall here in the offseason.
Yes, and it's like a rearview mirror on your car, and objects are closer than they may appear. So every single team, it's surprising. There's usually like one or two teams are like, what the heck did they just do in this offseason here? But all these teams in the Atlantic seem like they drastically improved. Like, you know, you're looking at the Detroit Red Wings. They went in and added some key players, some veteran guys to sort of supplement the young guys that are still learning, you know, how to lose and win in the National Hockey League. Ottawa got better in adding, you know, some much needed scoring punch, some veteran guys. But the Montreal Canadiens, I think they're going to surprise a lot of people. Everyone thought that they would be rebuilding last year and taking a step back when they sold off all their pieces at the deadline, but they've drastically improved. Ty Toffoli, I think, is going to end up being the darling of this free agency class, because I played with him in the minors, and this guy can score 30 goals. So it's going to be interesting to see how he's utilized for that Montreal Canadiens team. I could see him, you know, sneaking into the top six, even top line, easily with his skill level. But Buffalo, you know, they made some moves as well. They traded for Eric Staal, and he's a guy that still has a lot of hockey left. He's a 50-60 point guy still at his age. They got some help for playing with Eichel here. So every team's improved. So we thought the Leafs now were going to be the favorites now with all these teams that made these moves. But for me, all these other teams as well, they're doing well.
Holy smoke, Stewie's buzzing today. I'm just going to log off and you take it over from here, okay, bud?
Yeah, but this is my first time getting you without Berkey or anyone else, so you can't hide from me now. So you can hide on Twitter, but you don't get out of line, because I got some firepower ready for you.
Wow, I'm a keyboard warrior, that's for sure, but I got news for you. Justin Bourne now joins us. Justin, Berkey made the weirdest analogy I think I've ever heard in history of hockey analogies yesterday, about not being able to drive two cars at once. And he was alluding to Joe Thornton, said he had a Ford Edge he would never upgrade or at least go with a Tesla, which I think is asinine in my opinion. But now that we have the floor and you have the opportunity to finally talk about it because it is official, what do you make of Joe Thornton on the butts?
Well, first off, before I launch into that, just let me say it's a delight to have both of you on the air together at the same time. After watching the bromance and the bro enemy, I don't know what it even is, to be honest. So I'm excited about this. But as for Thornton, you know, I think it's easy to make too much of it because he's such a big name. But in terms of like practical hockey purposes, that deal at league minimum, you know, for a team that struggled to have quality center depth, you know, you're basically replacing Frederick Gauthier with Joe Thornton. To me, it puts some other guys in a real position to succeed. All of a sudden, Alexander Kerfoot can probably play a little bit more wing, where I think he's looked better than third line center. I think there's the possibility for him to, you know, make not just a first power play unit dangerous, but a second one. I think it's great. I understand Berkey's concerns about, you know, wanting toughness and heaviness and grit and all that, but I do think that there's some value to be had here for the Leafs in getting some punch out of the bottom of their lineup offensively.
And Nick, how about Joe Bowen throwing a bombshell, a watch bomb last night, saying that he still think there's a big move to be made and possibly, and I think he was alluding to Nylander too, so we'll see if that rings true. What do you think of that?
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. And I was just going to ask you, too. I mean, were you able to locate a GIF to explain the analogy by Brian Burke yesterday?
Rule number one, never speak of Berkey when he's not in, because he'll log in. You'll hear the glass shatter like Stone Cold Steve Austin, and Berkey will just appear. So I'll wait for him on the
Berkey
air.
I would love that.
Rule number one. You'll learn that easily.
Berkey brought it, that's for sure. There's no doubt about that. Guys, so as you know, the focus today, the Buffalo Sabres and now the Ottawa Senators, as we welcome in Haley Salvian, who covers the Ottawa Senators for The Athletic. Haley, it's been such a crazy whirlwind the last couple weeks, certainly for the Ottawa Senators, but a lot more positivity than certainly in years past. Thanks so much for joining us. What have you made of this offseason so far here?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I mean, I think it's been a really long offseason first, so it's kind of nice that there's been an uptick in things happening. It's been pretty busy, you know, the draft, free agency, you know, trading for Matt Murray. So there's been a lot going on, and I think the Senators have made a couple of moves that have maybe surprised some people. You know, the Matt Murray deal, locking him into such a big contract, you know, bringing in Evgeny Dadonov. There's been a couple of really pleasant surprises for the Senators this offseason. Still some work to be done, but I think, you know, the Senators are putting some pretty solid building blocks in to start to turn things around. I don't think they've done enough to be a contender right away. I saw Justin's tweet about, you know, just gasping at their roster. So I wouldn't say they've done enough to contend next year, but, you know, they're starting to put some good foundation down.
Yeah, you'll have to excuse that, you know, not trying to be too mean to the Sens fan base, but just like, oh man, like that, it's pretty thin when you get to the bottom six. And in terms of depth, one of the important pieces that they do have is Connor Brown. And that was sort of, I saw some chit-chat this morning about him going to arbitration and what a number could look like for him. Where do you expect to see Connor Brown fall in his next contract with the Sens here?
Yeah, well, I've been writing, I think, since July. The first piece I did on this was just about how the Senators should be trying to lock Connor Brown into, you know, a decently long-term contract. Nothing too big, but, you know, an either a 3 or 4 year deal. I think, you know, both on and off the ice, Connor has shown that he's a really important piece, and, you know, he's not going to be part of that young core like Brady Tkachuk and Thomas Chabot, Tim Stützle, but, you know, when you start to get into that window of contention, I think he's an important player that would, you know, round out a core that could help this team win. You know, obviously everyone knows what Connor Brown brought to the table in Toronto, but he's really stepped up his level of play in Ottawa with more opportunity under DJ Smith. You know, if the season would have finished with a full 82 games, he likely would have hit that 20-goal mark and 50 points. So he's definitely shown that he's a reliable, dependable two-way player who has more offensive upside to bring to the table than he did in Toronto. And in terms of his contract, I've been kind of saying that, you know, around a 4x4 deal could be pretty fair, somewhere in the $3.5 to $4 million ballpark. In the arbitration filings from today, he's 48 hours from his hearing. So the briefs were filed and the Senators put 2.25 on the table and Brown's camp put down 4.8. And the walkaway number is 4.5. So there's a lot of work to be done if the Senators are going to lock Connor Brown in and avoid arbitration. It's a really wide gap, but, you know, maybe this will incentivize things and be the impetus to get something done. But I think it would be important for the Ottawa Senators to keep Connor Brown in the mix for at least the next three seasons. And you don't want to let him go to arbitration and walk away as he's a UFA 1 year from now. So I think it's pretty important that they avoid arbitration.
The Sens recently signed Dadonov to a big ticket, 3 years, $15 million. He's had 3+ years of 25+ goals. But a lot of that success could be attributed to Barkov and Huberdeau in Florida. Do you think he can really step up and be the guy in Ottawa next year?
Yeah, I think so. And I asked him yesterday when we had a Zoom call with him, I kind of brought up, you know, you typically played with Barkov and Huberdeau and had some success. You know, is there anyone on the Sens roster that you could see, you know, helping you kind of replicate that kind of offensive production? And he said that he kind of hopes he can play on the top line with Brady Tkachuk. And he's heard really great things about Josh Norris and Tim Stützle. So I think he can replicate that, obviously. There isn't a Barkov or Huberdeau on this Senators roster, but I think when you watch Dadonov play, he has such a great shot and really good offensive instincts. And, you know, the Senators desperately need that kind of consistent offensive production. So, yeah, I think he can be a top guy there, especially if you can find some chemistry with, you know, maybe Brady Tkachuk. You know, I know Colin White didn't look like a number one center last season, but, you know, perhaps they can kind of recreate a bit of that Brady Tkachuk, Colin White, Mark Stone magic from two seasons ago that got Colin White that really big contract. You know, maybe if you put him up there on a top line with Tkachuk and Dadonov, he can start, you know, looking maybe like a number one C. So I think so. I think Dadonov has the skill set to be able to produce on his own without Huberto and Barkov. Obviously, that remains to be seen, but he's going to be given a lot of opportunity to play top line or top 6 minutes, and he's definitely going to be on that top power play, and he's going to eat a ton of minutes in Ottawa. So, yeah, I think that, you know, obviously we have to wait and see. I haven't seen him play with any of these guys in Ottawa yet, but I think he can definitely be an important piece.
Chatting Sens with Haley Salvian of The Athletic down in Ottawa. It's Nick Alberga, Justin Bourne, and Anthony Stewart in this edition of Hockey Central. I do like the Dadonov pickup quite a bit, even for that price tag. Not too shabby. A guy net 81 goals combined in the last three seasons. But I think it's quite clear this team continues to build. There's still some pretty legit names available in free agency among them. A guy like Mike Hoffman, do you think they would revisit that type of situation? Do you think they're done their heavy lifting here for the offseason?
Well, you know, my colleague Pierre LeBrun said he reported, I think, last week after the Dadonov signing that he doesn't think the Senators are quite done yet, either making a trade or doing something on the free agent market. I don't know if, you know, Mike Hoffman is someone who would want to go back to Ottawa and that the Senators would look to again. But, you know, Anthony Duclair is still on the open market. He's representing himself, and from the Senators' perspective, I don't know about Anthony Duclair's perspective, but at least from the Sens, I don't think the door is closed to, you know, talk to Duclair again if he circles back to Ottawa. It's been, you know, over a week now that he's been on the open market and looking for a new contract. So I think Duclair is somebody to maybe keep an eye on. Andreas Athanasiou, I believe he's still on the board. It's been kind of a busy week, so I haven't even been able to check that. But there's a couple of names on the free agent market at, you know, lower tickets than Dadonov signed for that could be decent options for the Senators. I think when you look at the roster, and like Justin said, once you start looking in that bottom six, there's some pretty big holes there. So I don't know if they're going to look for a top six guy, because I think the Senators are going to try to give, you know, Alex Formanton, Drake Batherson, Brady Tkachuk, Tim Stützle, all their young guys, the opportunity to show what they can do in the top six. So there's definitely some work to be done when it comes to the bottom half of the roster, and that's where I could see them making some moves.
Haley, when I spent a little time with DJ Smith and around the Leafs there, he was a Roman Polak fan, and he thought that that was a necessity for guys on the Leafs, the young players who were getting a lot more opportunity than they were used to have someone out there that played physical, that, you know, maybe protected them to some extent. And now I see in Ottawa that they've added a couple of guys there with Josh Brown and Erik Gudbranson, and I wonder if you think that this is a conscious effort on the Senators' part to get a certain type of player, a more physical guy, or if this is just, hey, here was a couple of good players that they thought were available to them.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned like the Roman Polak, you know, liking that kind of guy. I think it's definitely a conscious effort to add players like that. When we spoke to Pierre Dorion after the Erik Gudbranson signing, he even said, you know, we know the type of players that DJ Smith likes, and this is one of those guys. And so, you know, DJ Smith's teams going back to junior have always had those, you know, big guys who can protect your young skilled players, and DJ plays that kind of boxing out system where, you know, he likes having guys who can just clear in front of the crease, right, and push guys out of the way. So Erik Gudbranson's not going to be a guy that's going to skate the puck up the ice and be a big offensive player, but you don't need him for that because you have Thomas Chabot, Christian Milan, and possibly Erik Brännström. So they've kind of filled out that right side in the bottom line, with guys who are kind of going to play that kind of box out, you know, protect your young guys, protect your goalie kind of style, and Josh Brown and Erik Gudbranson, and to a lesser extent, bringing in Austin Watson for the kind of fourth line right wing spot instead of, you know, Scott Sabourin. So definitely a conscious effort to give DJ Smith the guys who work in his system.
We had Pierre Dorion on the show, and he closed the door on a Zdeno Chara return. Could you see a possible Ron Hainsey coming back? And I just say that because there's a lot of young defensemen coming up, and he sort of stabilizes whatever partner he has. And, you know, with Chabot, I know he's playing 25, 26 minutes a night, but do they need that veteran presence to sort of stabilize that back end? I knew they signed Gudbranson, but maybe someone else?
Yeah, I know when Josh Brown was when they made the acquisition for Josh Brown, I was kind of asking around, and I was told, you know, they're still kind of working on Ron Hainsey. But, you know, with Eric and Branson, that's now four players on that right side. So, you know, I wouldn't say that this is – the door is completely shut, but I don't expect Ron Hainsey to return because they still have Artem Zub, that Russian free agent they signed, you know, feels like years ago now, I think back in April or May. So the right side is, you know, they've got their four guys and they've got two of the bigger ones. And I think Eric and Branson is going to be that kind of leader presence. He has, I believe, over 500 games in the NHL. He's a bigger guy. He's local. So he's kind of that Mark Borbieski type that's going to play at the, you know, the third pair. So, you know, I'm not going to say that the door is completely shut, but I would be surprised if Ron Hainsey was brought back.
What Sens beat writer for The Athletic, Haley Salvian. It's Nick Alberga, Justin Bourne, and Anthony Stewart here on Hockey Central. I got a two-pronged question for you. What has the reaction been to those new old-school Sens jerseys? I love them. And two, I'm a conspiracy theorist. Did Adidas accidentally leak Brady Tkachuk as a new captain, in your opinion?
Yeah, well, first, I think the reaction's been really great, I think. You know, it's been something that Sens fans have been asking for a long time. I'm not a fan of the old Centurion, I guess people call it the 3D Centurion logo. You know, I didn't think those jerseys were all that nice, but I think the combination of the logo and specifically with the home jerseys, that all black look is so clean. So I know I'm a big fan of the home jerseys, the black on black with red stripes and the retro logo, I think looks pretty slick. But yeah, I don't know about that Adidas leak. I saw that and a lot of fans were tagging me in it and saying, like, can you confirm, like, is Brady Tkachuk the next captain? And you know, I don't know. I think, you know, everything we've heard from DJ Smith is that they don't want to rush a player like Tkachuk or Shabbat into a leadership role right away. You know, I think the Senators want Brady Tkachuk to be Brady Tkachuk, and they don't want to add any pressure by putting the C on his jersey. So if he ends up being named captain, then that'll be kind of funny that there was a leak. But, I mean, there was a ton of leaks of the 2D jersey. You know, there was, if you go to, like, Giant Tiger in Canada, there was the 2D jerseys months before this was released. So if there was some kind of leak again, that would be just very typical Ottawa. Can't keep anything, you know, in the jar there.
Sounds like Stewie's sources, I think.
I'm glad you actually mentioned very Ottawa, because it was, I guess, a week or so ago where I saw that Tim Stützle had got injured and needed a surgery and was going to be out for, I guess, up to 8 weeks. And I was like, man, that is super Ottawa right now. What can you tell us about that injury, when he's expected to be back? Will it be for the start of the season? And let's just say he is healthy. I guess it'd be good to hear sort of what an expectation would be for him, a reasonable expectation anyway.
Yeah, so and he was practicing with his Mannheim team in Germany, and it was kind of, you know, his general manager with Mannheim said it was kind of like an unlucky collision. You know, Stützle and his teammate collided, and Stützle fractured something in his hand. I don't have the exact specifics, but it was, you know, he had surgery on his hand to, you know, fix a fracture. The timeline is 6 to 8 weeks. He had surgery on Thursday last week, and, you know, there was no complications, successful surgery. And, yeah, I think the timeline has him coming back by December, and I think the good thing, you know, obviously you don't want anyone to get injured, and like you said, it's very Ottawa that your third overall pick gets injured exactly a week after he's drafted. But, you know, he's still going to be able to skate. He'll be able to start training. He's not going to just be sitting at home for the full 2 months, if that's how long his timeline ends up being, the full 8 weeks. And he should be back to full health on that timeline by December, which is, you know, in time for the World Juniors, in time for the Mannheim training camp. I know that the DEL season has been pushed back two times now, so I think a potential start date in Germany is around January at this point, and that's still being monitored. And obviously the NHL season's been pushed back, you know, conservatively to January 1st start. You know, the timeline has him being ready to play wherever that may be. And I think that's the big question, is just where is Tim Stützle going to play? It's my understanding that he has an out clause in his DEL contract, so that if he wants to play in the NHL and the Senators want him to play in NHL, that's, you know, not something that's going to Like, he shouldn't be stopped from doing that because of his German contract. But I think the expectation, you know, down the road, I think Tim Stützle has what it takes to be a number one center, but I think the Senators are going to ease him into the league on the left wing and then, you know, move him over to the center. I've heard mixed things. I think the Senators do think he can play in the NHL next year. Pierre Dorion has said we look forward to seeing him next season in Ottawa. So I think the expectation is that he's going to be ready to play for the Senators as soon as next season starts. But, you know, I'm always a big, I'm a little bit biased because I started my career covering, you know, the Marlies and junior hockey. So I'm a big development kind of person. You know, I'm never one to rush a player. So I think it'll just be about seeing what he can do in training camp and a couple of games and see if he's ready. You know, I don't think there should be crazy pressure on him to be in the NHL next season, but I think that's the expectation from the Senators and certainly from Stützle. He thinks that he's going to be ready to play in the NHL as soon as the season starts.
Final question goes to me here. There's a rumored Canadian division next year, so I'm going to put you on the spot here and have you rank the Canadian teams. You can omit Ottawa if you like, or put them smack dab in the middle. So rank the Canadian teams if you will.
Who's here? Okay. Oh, that's hard. I mean, I like what the Flames have done in getting a number one goalie. Oh, this is too hard. This is really I feel like no matter what I say, there's going to be like five markets who are going to be really mad at me.
Welcome to my world.
This is very cruel. You know, I would probably put the Senators towards the bottom. Like I said, I don't think they're a contender yet. You know, maybe the Senators, Canadians, and Jets toward the bottom. And then I don't know who's going to be at the top. You know, maybe let's say Edmonton. Some combination of Edmonton, Toronto, Calgary, then Vancouver. Is that like a ballpark? I did a ballpark ranking.
Yeah, that's fair. And then when Battle of the Blades airs on Thursday, you can rank your skaters, okay?
No problem.
Hey, this has been a blast. Go ahead.
That was not nice. That was that's too difficult to...
Agreed.
But yeah, that's my ballpark. Yeah.
Perfect. Works for us. Thanks so much for your time. Excellent job. And we'll talk soon, okay?
Thanks a lot, guys.
Anytime. That's Haley Salvian of The Athletic in Ottawa, and I can't wait to rank my skaters coming up for the Battle of the Blades on Thursday, Stewie.
I'm ready to go, I'll tell you that. So
I'm fired up.
I've been landing a triple. I'm working on my quad, so we'll see how that goes on Thursday.
Stewie, that was a cutthroat question. If someone had asked me that spur of the moment, I think I'd have said
You know why I asked it? Because someone asked me the exact same question, so I'm just passing it on. It's like the it's like the Ring videotape. You're just gonna pass it on and pass on the
mention. Here, you take this.
That is journalist Stu 101 thrown into the fire question. But we appreciate Haley's time here. Quickly, guys, I mean, how would you grade, and JB, we can start with you, the Ottawa Senators, because I'm a light marker, but I'd probably put them in the A's.
I mean, sure. It's they just
it's
have
early.
So
yeah.
Yeah, and they just have so far to go. Like, I do like the idea that they got a couple of defensemen who could play a little bit more physical style. That you know, to her point, to Haley's point, is how DJ Smith wants them to play. You need NHL players. So anytime you sign a guy like a Dadonov, it's like, okay, this is an NHL player who can score in the NHL. Great. I just look at their roster, and I see so many guys that I go, not sure. Not sure if he's an NHL player. Not sure if he's an NHL player. So right now they're so thin to me. Yes, I like what they've done, but they haven't done nearly enough to say they're going to be even competitive next season, by my estimation.
Stewie?
Yeah, I almost you know, chalk it up to a Cats game roster when you're trying to like fill out a top six and exactly put this together and see who's a top six guy, who's the bottom six guy. There's just really the pieces don't really add up. They're like, it's almost like they're missing four or five guys up front. Again, I like the Austin Watson addition, but Anisimov on the fourth line, I'm not a big fan of that. And there's a lot of young guys, a lot of unknown. Is Tierney going to step up and do what he needs to do? Obviously, I'm a big fan of Connor Brown. Hopefully he gets his deal you know, sorted out. I'm not sure if Dadonov can do the job by himself. So there's just a lot of unknowns with this roster, but you know, kudos to Pierre Dorion for really stepping up and going above and beyond to try to build this roster, because everyone counted them out dead last next year. But they're going to compete. They're definitely going to compete because they got a good coach, good system. They'll be there. But I said before, they were 2 years away from being 2 years away. I think they're maybe only 2 years away now.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with the assessment of both you guys. I think quietly on the back end, they're building something too with Thomas Chabot already there, Eric Brännström, Jake Sanderson down the road. So it's so crazy how you can go from all the negative and the fire talk the last couple of years now to Pierre Dorion's actually done a pretty decent job of building this franchise. But again, you know, it's harder to build your team up after you sort of gutted it. So we'll see what's in store for the Ottawa Senators going forward. Many thanks again to Haley Salvian. We'll hit the break. Other side, we'll talk about the Buffalo Sabres. I still can't get over seeing the number 4 old school Buffalo Sabres unit with Hall on the back, but that's what we'll see when the 2021 season does in fact start. Co-host of the Instigators on WGR 550 and the MSG Network, Craig Revay, former NHL defenseman, up next to break down the Buffalo Sabres frantic offseason. You're listening to Hockey Central with Nick Alberga, Justin Bourne, and Anthony Stewart on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It is time to tackle the Buffalo Sabres. It's Hockey Central for this Tuesday. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Nick Alberga, Justin Bourne, and Anthony Stewart with you. Kevin Adams, Taylor Hall, Eric Staal, Cody Eakin, and Tobias Reeder. It's been a hectic, crazy offseason once again for the Buffalo Sabres, trying to make ground here in the Atlantic Division, and it's time to break it all down with co-hosts of the Instigators on WGR 550, former NHL defenseman, of course, Craig Revay. Craig, thanks so much for joining us. Where were you when you found out Taylor Hall was a Buffalo Sabre, and what was your initial reaction to that?
I don't know where I was, but I just remember my phone being blown up in a big way. A lot of very, very happy fan base here in Buffalo to see that they went out and got a marquee free agent in Taylor Hall. And, you know, listen, I mean, it gives certainly gives it a different look here in Buffalo.
Justin?
Sorry, guys, I was stuck on the terrible, frustrating mute button. thanks for joining us there. My biggest question when I look at the Buffalo Sabres roster and it's just, what is their plan? What is their direction? Do you think this is a team that's going to be spending to the salary cap, or is there now an internal budget with what the Pegulas are going through?
To be honest with you, I don't know. I don't really know. We read something about that there was going to be an internal budget here in Buffalo, but that information never came out from the Pegulas themselves. You know, I think they've always been an ownership that they're willing to spend money and they're willing to go to the cap. It's just they want to make sure that the people that they're bringing in are the right fits. And you can see flat out with the addition of a player like Taylor Hall, they're not afraid to spend the money if they feel that it's the right move.
How are the 08s doing?
The 08s are, you know, just like everyone else, kind of scratching their head, a lot of practice time and no games.
Yeah, mine too. So, you know, every organization usually has like one superstar guy that sort of, you know, calls the shot or has a lot of say in what happens in the organization. So do you think this Taylor Hall signing has something to do with maybe Eichel saying, hey, I need a guy like this to really help get this team where it needs to be?
I think that has something to do with it. You know, Jack Eichel has really grown as not only a player, but as a person. You know, he's endured 5 years of losing here in Buffalo, and they're trying to find solutions. And, you know, a couple of those years at the beginning years when Jack Eichel was here, it was about, you know, giving an opportunity for these young players to continue to get better so you can make strides forward. Because we all know that in order to be great teams, you have to draft well and you have to develop your young players well. Well, now Jack's in the situation. He's 5 years into his pro career. He's played absolutely fantastic, but he needs help. And you know, bringing in Taylor Hall, which we all know, you know, he's won a Hart before. He's a superstar type player. I think this is a huge addition for Jack. But I'm going to tell you, I think one of the biggest additions is Eric Staal. And Eric Staal has won a Stanley Cup before. He has that elite pedigree, and you know what he's going to bring to the locker room itself with this young group, I think is very, very important also.
1,000%, and I think he's going to do great things as well for Casey Mittelstadt and Cousins up the middle and sort of maturing them right along. There's no doubt about that with Craig Revet here, Coast of the Instigators, talking Buffalo Sabres, Nick Alberga, Justin Bourne, and Anthony Stewart here on Hockey Central. It's intriguing, I think, when you look at this Buffalo team. Do you think they felt the pressure around them to do something substantial more so because of what Montreal has done, not so much with the Ottawa Senators, but Ottawa's gotten better? Like, everybody around them seems to have improved here.
You know what? I mean, that's a really, really good point. I think that Montreal did make some moves that certainly they identified an area that they needed to get better at. Went out and got a big, strong winger and Josh Anderson. Went and got a scoring winger and Tyler Toffoli, and not to be forgotten, Joel Edmondson, who they picked up from Carolina, I think is a pretty darn good pickup for Montreal. That being said, when you look at Buffalo, we needed guys behind Jack Eichel down the middle. And they went out and they got Eric Staal, who had a fantastic year last year, 19 goals and 48 points in a shortened season. He's going to be that second-line center. They went and got a veteran player in Cody Eakin that plays with grit and speed, and I think that's going to be a huge addition. And then all of a sudden you just sprinkle in a little top-end forward in Hull. I mean, it's I think Buffalo has made some really, really strong moves moving forward. And my opinion, I don't think they're done. I don't think they're done. I think there's a few things that they can tinker with, but for the most part, I think the major part of their build is there, but I think they're not quite done yet.
Craig, in looking at their roster and trying to assess sort of what the path forward for them is to eventually win a Stanley Cup, you know, that obviously is the ultimate goal of every team, you know. Do you feel like they're still, would you qualify they're in a rebuild? Do you feel like next year is the season where you expect them to start being more competitive? Where are they on their sort of arc towards what the eventual goal would be?
Well, right now, I think they're in a situation where this year in particular, they had a lot of money that they could spend. I think they only had three players on the forward line that had contracts, so there was a lot of unrestricted free agents. They had the ability to build the team that they wanted. And, you know, next year, you know, Taylor Hall's on a one-year deal. Eric Staal's on a one-year deal. They're still open to trying to find that perfect marriage, and they're gonna see what next year holds. And both sides, I think Taylor Hall is extremely excited to play for Ralph Krueger. I honestly believe that he is 99% of the reason why Taylor Hall is here. And I think that it'll be interesting to see moving forward. You know, can this team gel together? Can this team make strides moving forward? And like you said, this is not a rebuild team anymore. Jack Eichel's out of the rebuild phase. You know, you give an elite player like, Sam Reinhart, Jack Eichel, even Rasmus Dahlin is going into his third year. It's not a rebuild anymore. Now it's time to, you know, put the pieces around our star players and build this and move from there.
So do you think the success of the back end and the goaltending has to do with Rasmus Dahlin taking the next step, or he's on a pretty good trajectory of being a top defenseman in the National Hockey League?
Well, you look at most defensemen, in the National Hockey League, a lot of them take, 3-4 years, sometimes even 5 years. You look at Victor Hedman and look at back to his path with the Tampa Bay Lightning when he was drafted, I think, second or third overall. It took him 3-4 years to become, you know, the defenseman that he is, that we're all watching today. And I think that Rasmus
Dahlin is very much the same. He's the most skilled defenseman I've ever watched. I've had the ability to keep a close eye on him, and he has a skill level that is unlike I've ever seen. But there's still parts of his games that he's still continuing to develop. When he came to Buffalo at 18 years old, he was 6'3". He was 180 pounds. He looked that he had all the skills, but he still needed the physical and the mental maturity. And, you know, 3 years later, we're looking at Erasmus Dahlin now that's 6'3", 205 pounds, that is you can just tell is a more mature physically and mentally, player. And I think you're going to see, you know, with this next season and the season after, you're going to see big, big strides from Rasmus Dahlin.
And obviously they're hoping for everything to gel all at once. There's no doubt about that. With Craig Rivet here of the Instigators, Nick Alberga, Justin Bourne, and Anthony Stewart here in Hockey Central. I think, you know, the one thing when I analyze this team, I think they're way better than they were, say, 2 months ago. But my major league concern still, and maybe it's wrong in saying this, is the goaltending. Have you seen enough out of Linus Ullmark to have faith in him as this team's number one?
I believe that he can be a number one. And I've said this on our show, The Instigators, for quite some time, that to me, it's not just about your goaltending. It's about the style and structure that the team plays in front of you. Okay. We had Robin Lehner, who was, you know, as most people here in Buffalo, the fan base would say, he was a complete disaster, but I don't believe that he was a disaster. I think that the team in front of him and the way they played defense was a disaster. Robin Lehner went to the Islanders the very next year and had one of the best goals against average in the league. And that's due to team structure playing in front of them. I think that Linus Ullmark is a outstanding goaltender. I think he is not an issue. I don't think they should be looking at goaltending. That's just my impression. Because I think that we have Linus Ullmark who can take the reins of being a number one this year. And I feel very comfortable with that.
While we're discussing defensemen there, but going back to Rasmus Dahlin, a different Rasmus that you have on the D there is Rasmus Ristolainen. He's a name that comes up in trade talks often with the Buffalo Sabres. I don't exactly know what to make of him. I mean, he's huge. He's 25. He makes $5.5 million or so per season. What should I make of this guy? Is he a part of the solution or a part of the problem in Buffalo?
Again, another guy that just struggled trying to find his way with a team that I felt like lacked overall team concept. And you know, when you're Rasmus Ristolainen and you're playing 27, 28, sometimes 30 minutes a night on a team that struggles structurally, you're going to struggle. That's because he's only one of five players on the ice. Last year with Ralph Krueger and the relationship that Rasmus Ristolainen had, he probably had the best season of his NHL career. I thought that he played within himself. I thought that they managed his minutes properly where he wasn't in the, you know, 28, 29, 30 minutes a night. He was playing the proper minutes to give the team proper minutes. He's very well liked here in Buffalo. He's very well liked in the locker room. I think Ralph Krueger and Ristolainen have built a really, really strong relationship. And I think that, you know, he's a type of player that every team needs. He's big. He can skate. He's highly physical. He can add offense from the back end. You know, the last 5 years, he's had 40-plus point seasons, and then this last year had 33 points, but it was in a shortened season. He was on pace for his fifth 40-point season. He's a very, very good player, and I think, obviously, as a defenseman, you don't have to play as much defense when you have better forwards. And, you know, the addition of the three guys that they brought up front in Hall, Stahl, and Eakin, I think is going to add to the overall team success.
Stewie, you got a last one or that's it?
Yeah, no, I'll ask one. I want to know, have they sorted out their situation in Rochester yet with coaching and management? And how's the pipeline looking? Do we see, maybe a Mittelstadt stepping up to the big roster next year again?
Well, that's going to be a very interesting question. You know, Casey Mittelstadt, that was a very high draft pick, drafted eighth overall. A couple years back, I think it was 2018 or 2017, he had very high expectations. They ended up signing him out of the Minnesota University of Minnesota. He came to the league, I guess what I would say, and got brought into an environment that was a little bit over his head. You know, you had Jack Eichel as the number one guy, the number one centerman, and Casey Mittelstadt almost got thrown into a position that was a little bit over his head for a 19-year-old. He's struggled a little bit. I think it's, partly his confidence, and, you know, he's got some areas of his game that he needs to continue to work at. That being said, training camp's going to be big for him. He's going to have to come here, and he's going to have to show that he is going to earn a spot. Where 3 years ago when he came here, he was given a spot. Well, the Sabres are not at a point anymore where they have to give spots away to young guys. You're going to have to earn your spot. So it's going to be, you know, the next number of months for Casey Mittelstadt are going to be, you're going to have to train properly. You're going to have to come in here with the proper attitude, and you're going to have to earn what you get. And I think that's the way, you know, we would all want it. You know, when I came into the league, I wasn't given anything. I had to work every single day for everything that I got. And I think we're in a situation here in Buffalo right now that our young guys, they're going to have to earn what they're going to get now.
No doubt about that. And much more insulation, again, as you mentioned, with the addition of Eric Staal up the middle. Craig, this has been a lot of fun. Thanks so much for this.
My pleasure, guys. Anytime.
Have a great day. That's Craig Reveille, host of the Instigators on WGR 550. And certainly I echo those sentiments, Justin. I think when you look at this Buffalo team, I think they went out and accomplished what they set out to do. I mean, I think the gravy on top clearly was Taylor Hall, but I like the Eric Staal pickup quite a bit.
I like the Staal addition too. And, you know, what's different from our first block when we were talking about Ottawa and looking at their roster is Ottawa had a lot of guys that I mentioned. I was like, is he an NHL player? Is he an NHL player? I look at this team and I see a bunch of NHL players. Like, even all the way through the lineup, you can say, all right, that guy's an NHL player. The problem is they're in a division with teams that have legit difference makers. Tampa Bay, Boston, Toronto. Like, there's players on those teams. And, you know, that Jeff Skinner deal looks awfully rough, awfully early. You know, the Hall addition was key, but there's no guarantee they have him for a second year. And it's tough to look at this team and just see a bright future. You know, the pipeline in Ottawa, at least, I feel like there's a little bit more on the way.
Yeah, that's exactly. Go ahead.
I was going to say, no, what I like about the Buffalo Sabres now is, you know, usually when teams suck, they just say, ah, we suck again, and they just don't do anything about it. But they're actually trying to improve the roster. So you've got to give kudos to Kevin Adams and Pierre Dorion because they're actually out there making moves. They're not just sitting back saying, ah, we stink. We'll just see how it goes. They're actually trying to improve the roster because they know now in today's NHL with a couple of right moves and you get hot goaltending, great coaching, you have a chance to win a round or two, and that should be the goal. And it's no different in Buffalo.
You just never know, and not to mention the alignment of each division could look a little different than
that's
it has in years previous, right?
So we got to get Dwayne from Buffalo on next. I want to hear what he has to say about the additions.
Yeah. Let's lock him in. Let's lock him in at some point in time this week, guys. This has been great. We'll hit the break, and we'll wrap things up after this. This is Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. All right, some housekeeping notes before we wrap up this Tuesday edition of Hockey Central. Nick Alberga, Justin Bourne, and Anthony Stewart with you. Salary arbitration could go ahead for Ilya Mikheyev tomorrow of the Maple Leafs. Toronto's asking for 2 years at $1 million per. Mikheyev at 1 year, $2.7 million. As we heard earlier with Haley Salvian, Connor Brown, his hearing scheduled for Thursday. Ottawa offering 1 year at $2.25 million. Brown at 1 year, $4.8 million. a guy specifically, and JB, we'll start with you. What do you think happens with Mikheyev? Do you think he actually gets to an arbitrator here?
Well, I think if he does, he's in some trouble. The guy played 39 hockey games in the NHL. It's pretty tough to go to an arbitrator and say you're worth $2.7 million unless you scored about 70 points in those games. So, I think he would be going to arbitration with the least games played of anyone ever, and I believe the previous was 63 games played was the lowest. I forget the name, but the guy was awarded less than $1 million just based on having no resume. So I think there's some incentive for Mikheyev to get this deal done and not go to arbitration. And I think the Leafs are going to come out looking pretty good on a player who's probably going to outperform whatever number they end up getting him at.
Yeah, I could see both sides with this because, you know, Mikheyev's got to be careful now because if your number gets too high, you see what happened in years past with guys, it's a revolving door of guys over 1.5 saying see you later, within a year. So, but at the same time, I think the agent has a little bit of leverage now because he's bringing all the Russian players, you know, to this Toronto Maple Leafs team. So that's why I say they get a deal done just based on hockey politics or hood politics, as they say. Mikheyev, he has an opportunity to step up and play on that second line left wing. They get it done before arbitration.
Yeah, common sense, just meet in the middle, at least in my opinion. Stewie, you got the floor because I believe you're not with us until Friday after the season debut of Battle of the Blades. I can't say it, but tee us up for that one.
Yeah, I'm excited. Thursday is the first show, live show. We're working on all our moves. My great partner in Violetta, the team has been great. It's a great show. It's for a great charity, Jumpstart. I'm very excited to get on the ice and show the moves that I've been working on for the last 3.5-4 weeks here.
And I can't wait to gif you on Twitter, boys. Excellent job. Thanks for this.
Thanks, guys.
Nothing but Stewie. He gone. Many thanks to Justin Bourne, Anthony Stewart, Haley Salvian, and Craig Rivet for coming on, talking about Ottawa and Buffalo, respectively. And, of course, to Matt Marchese, Dylan Brown, and Lance Kennedy for their hard work behind the scenes. Again, this has been Hockey Central here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Have a great day.